Welcome to the Full of Tracy Monero commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's June 1st, and it is 10:44 p.m. and that is Irish time. And there's been a lot of action over the last few days, and I thought I was bereft, or I don't want to leave subscribers bereft of any commentary, because I think there's a lot to say just by what's happened over the last 10 days on the S&P 500. When we think about what's going on, well, we've had a good rebound from 3,800 to 4,200, and that broke the short-term sequence of lower rally highs. So if one were a bull, then it would be a justifiable signal to close out shorts and to perhaps try and go long. But now we're at the first area of potential resistance, and it's quite normal to see a previous area of support become a new area of resistance, which is exactly what we're starting to see right now. And if we zoom out and just look at the weekly chart, well, when we think about the broader picture, this has been a very consistent trend over the last decade, and we've had lots of instances of medium-term corrections along the way, and every one of those has successfully bounced from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And we're not quite there yet with the S&P 500. So it's too early to say that this trend has in fact ended on a secular basis. But at the same time, there are a lot of headwinds. And most particularly because the economy is still firing on all cylinders. And therefore, people are wondering what the outlook for interest rates is going to be and what kind of impact that's going to have on consumer spending, and whether the continued strength in the economy is going to be sustainable. So we're at the first point of potential resistance, and the market was a little lower in here today. It's going to have to, at a minimum, sustain the move above the lower side of this overhead trading range, push back above the 200-day moving average, and then sustain that move if we're going to have clear evidence that this medium-term decline is in fact over. If one were to then decide that this is or that's the perspective of the bulls, if one is going to adopt the perspective of a bear, this is an ideal point at which to increase one's short. We're at the first area of potential resistance after all. But the potential gain versus potential reward isn't as compelling now as it was 6 or 7 weeks ago. Because over the course of the last decade, we've had lots of examples where the market has bounced from the 1,000-day moving average, and that's only now about 500 points away from where the price is sitting. So it suggests that there's about 10% of fat on the market right now that could get shaved off. Now then, let's think about the S&P 500 relative to the performance of the Nasdaq 100, because the Nasdaq has completely unwound its overextension relative to the 1,000-day moving average, and in fact, it did not drop below it during 2020. So the Nasdaq has been the clear leader in this big bull market. And by being the leader, it has had a more consistent trend. It also accelerated more, but then also has, because it's a leader, has had the more consistent trend overall. And as long as it is bouncing from the region of that 1,000-day moving average, well, we can then continue to say that the secular trend is in fact intact, but being threatened. And that's exactly where we are right now. But if we were simply to look at only what's going on in terms of the Wall Street primary indices, then that would perhaps cloud what else is going on. We've had a significant pop in the oil price. Now we've had a contract change. So the price is now still around at the 115 level. So it would be a mistake to just simply say that this is an abrupt change. that suddenly a whole lot of new oil has suddenly turned up on the market. But we have got evidence of at least short-term resistance just by looking at the individual contract. So this would suggest that perhaps we're going to see a little bit of pause and consolidation because we're in the region of the highs from back in March. And that would be positive for stocks. But we're certainly in an environment where people are worried about inflation, and with good reason, because just driving around Ireland over the course of the last few days, it's been abundantly clear that the price of gasoline and diesel in California today is about the same as it is in Ireland. Now, it's already at a record high here, but Ireland's a major importer. Ireland is so far away from being energy independent that it's not even a pipe dream. Whereas when we think about the USA, where energy independence was within its grasp not more than a year and a half ago, well, then we're in obviously a very different environment. So this massive jump in the price of oil is going to have repercussions, but most particularly have repercussions for consuming nations. And then I think it's also interesting that when we look at the significant depreciation that the yen had all the way through April and May, and then we had the bounce over most of May, and it's almost completely given it up. So this is still very much a downtrend for the yen and an uptrend for the dollar. But generally, the yen tends to attract interest when people start to worry about the integrity of markets. So it's a safe haven asset, and it is certainly not providing a lot of support right now. Then, when we think about the 10-year yield, well, we're still hovering here around 2.9%. So this continues to look like some support for prices around the 3% level. And we're in the region of the peak in yields and the lows in prices that have been set over the course of the last decade. So it's a natural area where buyers might begin to return to dominance and begin to ask questions about value. So we're at this rather critical juncture where prices have pulled back enough that there are value propositions available, and people are obviously keen to buy the dip because they've been conditioned to accept that that's going to be a or to expect that that's going to be a favorable outcome because it's worked every other time over the course of the last 13 years, so why wouldn't it work now? But it does come down to inflationary pressures, and it's going to start at popping up in political discussions. Now, we've already seen that in Spain they've introduced some measures to try and stop the pass-through in prices for crude oil. And Boris Johnson is talking about reintroducing the imperial weights me or weights and measures system. Now, that's a kind of a desperate populist thing to do, and it does really suggest that in the UK they're getting worried, or at least the government is getting worried about the toll of inflation. So there's the realistic possibility that they're also going to try and introduce price controls. And the most important thing about price controls is they do work, but really only for a short period of time. So when governments decide that they're going to subsidize and introduce fuel subsidies, the first thing is that they control inflation instantly. And that does help to allay some fears. But they don't do anything to change the underlying stresses. So when then they become politically unpalatable or too expensive, well, then they're abandoned and inflation takes over again. We can see the same thing going on in Brazil right now, and they have an election coming up. So this question about energy prices is starting to move really front and center. Now, the Bovespa index has been building support over the course of the last few months, but it's not rallying in a really dynamic manner. And at least in local currency terms, it's firming from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. It's not breaking lower. And just like the stock market is caught in this range between the 1,000 and the 200-day moving averages, the currency is also now ranging between the 1,000 and 200-day moving average. So it eased in here today and continues to exhibit resistance in the region of this 1,000-day moving average. For Brazil to really fire on all cylinders, well, oil will probably have to continue to march higher following a consolidation, but then it will also have to sustain a move through that 1,000-day moving average. Well, the Brazilian real is a proxy for energy prices and commodities generally. So the fact that it hasn't broken out yet suggests that investors aren't quite willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, when we think about what's going on in China, they've been really very reticent to pull the trigger on really big stimulative moves, but they're not going to allow the economy to decline in an unruly manner either. So the H share index has rebounded over the course of the last 2 weeks. It has put in a higher reaction low. Now, it has not quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs. And if it can sustain a move back up through that 8,000 level, well, then that will put it back above the lows put in 2020 and 2021, and then also above the 200-day moving average. And the price chart's going to start looking a lot more attractive. But it will probably require continued efforts by the government in China to support the market. And the Nifty index has also been really quite steady. But we're all really being held hostage by this question about inflation and when is it going to be brought definitely under control. So we're starting to see some evidence that inflationary pressures are peaking, but we haven't had big dynamic moves. Now, when you get inflationary measures that have been rising month by month by month, and then you get one that's not rising, it's very tempting to think, well, that's the end of it. But we haven't quite yet seen that. What we are starting to see, however, is that gold is doing better, and it has bounced from the $1,800 area, and it's firming from the region of the 200-day moving average, and may now be putting in a higher reaction low. So gold does best when governments aren't, or I think central banks aren't able to do what they need to do to control inflation. And this, I think, gets to the crux of the argument that on the one hand, we have inflationary pressures, and they're being led by commodity prices, but also by manufactured good prices. It's, on the one hand, clearly initiated by massive monetary accommodation during the pandemic, and the continued willingness of governments to run deficits, and the fear that governments have about restive populations, whether because of the populist right or the populist left, there's palpable fear about protest movements. And I think that is equally applicable in a large number of countries. So all of these factors have contributed to inflation. Now, there are obviously then the additional problems with the war in Ukraine and the fact that it is looking increasingly likely that it is going to become a protracted affair, because Russia has plenty of money with which to prosecute this war. Now, that doesn't mean that the Russian people are suddenly in the lap of luxury. Far from it. They're really Russian people are in very dire situation right now. But the Russian administration are making the calculated bet that they have got a greater capacity to endure hardship than Europe does. So we've definitely seen that Europe is stepping up efforts to try and wean themselves off of Russian oil, and in the full knowledge that it's not entirely possible. So this continues to represent a very difficult situation. And we're still in an environment where there's so much uncertainty that, at the very minimum, following the big pullbacks that we've seen on stocks. Now, one thing I think is interesting is that natural gas prices in Europe haven't rebounded. So this would suggest that because there's less demand at this time of the year, there's a lot more attention going to be on trying to stoke interest in really rebuilding inventories ahead of next winter, where I think European gas is going to become an exceptionally topical conversation. But then it's also, I think, particularly interesting that we're starting to see a narrowing of the arbitrage between US and European gas. So, despite the fact that oil was in negative territory today and yesterday, natural gas prices have rebounded and continue to steady here in the $8 area for the USA. So, inflation isn't just about to disappear. And there's the realistic possibility that we're going to continue to see price pressures. And ultimately, it's going to result in slower growth. And slower growth has inevitably, or is inevitably, going to have a knock-on impact on earnings potential. So I think the best case scenario is that stocks begin to range rather than trend lower. But if they're going to do that, then the lows put in 10 days ago will have to hold. And then subsequently, we'll move into a more rangy pattern, less liable to big bouts of volatility. We are certainly starting to see that China is beginning to turn around, and that was a significant lag on global markets for just about all of 2021. A significant number of the European markets look like they're putting in higher reaction lows. And the European Central Bank is talking about raising rates as many as two times. So the euro has at least stabilized. But again, this is still a really quite consistent downtrend. So I think it would be rash to conclude just yet that it is in fact over, because we haven't yet seen the sequence of lower rally highs broken. We certainly had a short-term oversold condition, and some of that oversold condition has now been unwound. But it's going to have to do a lot more than that to really confirm that we're not still in a supply-dominated environment for the euro. Now, the Federal Reserve began their quantitative tightening program today. So we've seen some bouncing in stocks ahead of that. So there was a little bit of sell the rumor and buy the news going on. But this is siphoning liquidity out of global markets in an effort to control inflation. And it's going to lead to lower growth. So we're still in this corrective phase overall. We have not yet seen a clear signal from central banks that it's over, and therefore, it's not yet a time to back up the truck and start buying aggressively. But certainly, if there are sectors that should be doing well, then it's in the resources sector, because we still have an uncertain economic environment. And we're in an equally important environment for the ESG movement, where there's a lot of debate going on right now about greenwashing and about exactly what are worthwhile investments. And this kind of decision making and discussion is going to transform into sanctioned and unsanctioned ways of investing. Now, copper is another instrument that's at a really pivotal point. So it has fallen through the 200-day moving average, bounced from the psychological $4 area, and is now back testing the 200-day moving average. So this is a really narrow place for margin of error, where a decline of 10% would take it to a new low. An advance of 10% would really be a powerful rebound from a previous area of support. And either outcome would clearly change the outlook for the chart. So this is the do or die moment for the secular argument for copper now. Doesn't mean that there can't be a secular bull market for copper later, or that the green revolution won't actually be successful. But what we as investors need is for it to happen in a predictable fashion. And the problem right now is that with rising interest rates, lower potential growth, and obviously then the question about just how committed China is to a lot of stimulus, then are we going to have the quantity of money spent necessary to fuel a big commodity bull market now? Maybe we're going to have to wait a year or two. And if that's the case, well, then between now and then, we could be treated to volatility. So, obviously, what happens to the copper price in particular is going to be, I think, really rather important to the ESG question over the course of the next year. And with that, I think I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.